With the waters of Buzzards Bay lapping on the shore nearby, RPM News Weekly presents Rick's Tech Talk. Here in the RPM studio, I've got Cousin Rick on the line in Needham, Massachusetts. Good afternoon, Cousin Rick.
Good afternoon, Rich. How are you doing today?
We're doing fine. We're into March now, and, in like a lion, we've got some real cold, windy weather here. But it looks, after the rain comes through this weekend, it looks promising. How about you up there in Needham?
Oh, it's sunny, cool, sunny. The wind has calmed down, but it's meteorological spring, March 1st.
Okay, I guess we should be happy.
I think we're always happy.
Okay, so what is your ride of the week?
Okay, the ride of the week. First, I got to go back to last week's ride of the week. Because something we forgot to mention, or that I forgot to mention, our ride was the Bronco Heritage Limited Edition. And our readers should go, if they're on rpmnewsweekly.com, there's a great video of that vehicle in the snow, and you can see exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, that's right. The snowy hills of Hill, New Hampshire.
Right, and they can see you cutting wood.
Right, that's right. What a vehicle. So how does it compare with what you've got this week?
Well, this week it's a little different. It's a unique vehicle, but it is, over the top. It's the Ford F-150 Raptor R. It goes beyond the Raptor. It's the Raptor R.
Sounds menacing.
Yeah, I consider it like a monster truck. It's a big truck, big tires. It's the Raptor R 4x4 Super Crew cab. It's got a 5.2-liter supercharged V8 engine, which puts out 700 horsepower and 640 pound-feet of torque.
Wowie zowie.
Yeah, and it's got a 10-speed automatic transmission, and it boasts that you can go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds.
Wow.
I don't know why you'd want to do that in a truck. But, see, this truck, the Raptor is an extreme truck. The Raptor R comes in at around $30,000 more. It comes in at about $109,145. And it is geared for, say, what you see on the TV commercials, some of these extreme people going around the desert and kicking up dust and all kinds of sport like that. I think it's geared to a very unique market, but it must have a high profit margin.
Well, sounds like it with that price tag. And I agree is that there's a certain limited and narrow market that might be interested in a vehicle like that. Although, as far as vehicles that have a certain kind of mystique and charm in that kind of a way, some of the buyers may not be even intending to use it for its full on performance purposes.
Right, but I think if you're not going to do that, you might as well get the regular Raptor and save $30,000. The Raptor R with that big engine gets EPA numbers of 10 miles per gallon city, 15 highway, and a combined number of 12. Now, when I was driving this around, I was trying to be light on the throttle. And over the miles that I drove, the 50 to 60 miles, I had trouble getting 12 miles per gallon. Cruising along the highway, you can get a lot better than stop and go in the city. But it did have a nice snarl. Yeah. You can pulse the gas and get a rum.
Yeah, in a certain kind of a way, it's sort of pitiful that that's all it gets for gas mileage. And these days, especially with a lot more consciousness about climate change and the use of fossil fuels.
Well, the Raptor R comes in distinct colors, too. Ours was, it came, and my wife looks out the window and said, this truck looks like it's tomato soup. But the color is officially code orange.
Okay. Sounds mysterious, you know.
Yeah, like I said, it's got the 37-inch tires on 17-inch wheels, electronic locking rear axle, and some of the other things. Oh, it's got the second row heated seats. You have heated seats, and you can adjust the pedals to move in and out once you adjust your driver's position, so you can get comfortable there. Skid plates underneath, and terrain management system.
Pretty well loaded. So
it's loaded, and it is geared for extreme off-roading.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I guess that must have been quite a week. Lots of thrills, hopefully no spills.
Right. I took it to the Needham dump and got rid of some brush.
Well, I suppose you could have run roughshod over some of the trash piles there.
Yeah, but they would have kicked me out, I think.
Yeah, you lose your permit.
Yep.
Well,
and one other spec, it's got, it can tow 8,700 pounds, which, because of the way I think it's sprung and so on, is less than the regular Raptor, which can tow 14,000 pounds.
Right.
That's the high and wide ride of the week, the Ford Raptor R.
Well, quite a specialty vehicle, and I guess the ride was probably memorable. What else have you got for us?
Okay, sticking to automotive, this just came in the other day. It's from Honda, and Honda just announced what they call the CRV-EFCEV, which stands for, it's the first production plug-in hydrogen fuel cell electric vehicle. Now, Toyota had a fuel cell vehicle, the Mirai, some years ago, but this is, it's a plug-in. So there's an electric battery in the vehicle, plus a pressurized hydrogen fuel tank. And so on the battery, the vehicle has a range of 29 miles. So you can drive locally and not use the fuel cell. But with the, if you use up the fuel cell that's fully fueled up, you can go 270 miles. Now, this vehicle, it's listed as a 2025 vehicle. It's going to be available starting only in California and only for lease. And in California, I looked it up, there's around between 55 and 100 hydrogen fueling stations. Most of these are in the Bay Area or in Los Angeles. So once this comes out, it's kind of like an experiment to see how well it gets accepted by the lessees and how convenient it is to hydrogen fuel. And that's the big key with hydrogen, is the infrastructure and the availability of clean hydrogen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a little bit of an explanation on how the fuel cell works. It's actually having the hydrogen is creating electricity, which so the vehicle runs.
Well, you take hydrogen, you combine it with oxygen, you form a water molecule, but at the same time you produce electricity. And so that's how you propel the vehicle.
Right.
And the exhaust is just water vapor.
Mm-hmm. So there's no combustion in terms with the hydrogen. It's actually just a chemical reaction that ends up releasing some electricity. And
that's right.
Yeah. So very clean system. That's for sure. It would be nice to see more of that. Now it's a CRV. Will it be basically very similar on the outside general appearance to the Honda CRV SUV?
Yeah, it's on the CRV platform.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's also the fuel cells were co-developed with General Motors with their joint venture.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds exciting. And so you said that it is the first that combines both the idea of a plug-in and a hydrogen fuel cell.
Right. Now, I think that's kind of to give a little backup. Usually when you have a plug-in, the internal combustion engine backs up the battery, but here it's kind of like the battery is backing up the fuel cell.
Well, very interesting. We ought to stay on that and get back as see how this trial run works out in California for Honda.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see how that works out. But speaking of California, our friends at iccars.com, in their latest study, they listed the 10 most and 10 least EV-friendly places to live in America. And basically, it's by EV-friendly, the criteria there was the number of residents per EV charger. And so, for instance, the most friendly EV state is Vermont. There's a total of 931 chargers in Vermont, but because Vermont isn't that well populated, that means there are 695 residents per charger. Okay, now the least friendly state for EVs is Mississippi. There's a total of 419 chargers, but because the population is more than Vermont, there's about 7,000 residents per charger.
Quite a difference.
And the IC Cars also breaks it down by which cities are the most EV friendly. And that's San Francisco, Oakland area, and the least friendly city is Milwaukee.
So how did Massachusetts fare on this?
Well, let's see. I think Massachusetts, Massachusetts is number three on the friendly list, and Rhode Island is number nine, and Connecticut is number 10.
Okay, well, that's good. So New England drivers will have better access to EV charging stations.
I hope so, although, living here, it doesn't seem like there are that many when you want them.
True.
And if you find one, it may not be working.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate case. But a lot of that will turn around now that we're the auto manufacturers are moving in the direction of the North American charging system, which is essentially the Tesla chargers. So there'll
Right.
be all.
Ford is making adapters available at the end of this month to use the Tesla chargers.
Well, that should make a big difference. It's quite frequent that I've gone into either a shopping plaza or somewhere, a fueling station on a freeway, and seen that there were a number of Tesla chargers. Sometimes 6 or 8 of them, and they were getting used, but there were always 3 or 4 that were available. And when you're needing a charge, and you've got, pull in, and you find out that the non-Teslas, would maybe get 1 or 2, and like you said, sometimes something would have happened to them, and they weren't functioning properly. So I wonder how this will fare with the companies like EVgo and ChargePoint and EV Connect, Electrify America.
Well, hopefully, with more competition, they'll be cutting their rates.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is a bit expensive, to use the fast chargers in any case. ChargePoint has been a little bit more reasonable, but a lot of theirs are the level two chargers.
Right. And still, the cheapest way to charge is at home.
So far, although we've experienced a pretty big hefty jump in electric rates, home electric rates. It's cl close to 40%, which is a pretty heavy load, pardon the pun.
Yeah, I we have community solar, which means that I bought solar, but it's not on the house. It's at a solar farm. And so that's where we get our electricity from. So most of the year, I don't see a bill from the electric company.
Right. I hope the rates are fine, so when you do get your bill.
Well, that's what I'm looking at. I just added up for the current year, and it seems it's quite a significant amount more than the previous year. So I just have to go look at the data to see if the solar farm output a lot more power last year, depending on the weather, or if they jumped the rate. So we'll find out about that.
All right, so what else have you got for us this week?
Okay, well, let's go from California to outer space. Although some people might say there's not that much of a difference, but that's for another blog. But we have to note that the Intuitive Machines Odyssey lander has landed on the moon. And it first was thought that it had toppled over, but more data came in, and it looks like one of the landing legs failed. And when it landed, it's tilted. It's just tilted. And the mission has ended now because it's night where the lander had landed, and it can't recharge its solar batteries because there's no sunlight on it. But it did generate a lot of data, and hopefully we can learn from that and get some more pictures back. The team was able to fix a guidance flaw just before it landed. So the primary laser based landing system wasn't working, so they used a NASA instrument on board with its lasers to help land the Odyssey. And the only thing that didn't really work, they didn't deploy what they call the Eagle Cam, which was supposed to separate just before landing and take pictures of what the landing looked like. And so if that had happened, they would have had a good idea of what exactly developed in the landing, where it landed either moving sideways that caused the leg to fail.
Right. Now, one of the momentous aspects of this is that, if I'm not mistaken, that's the first commercial landing on the moon. In other words, a commercial enterprise that sent this vehicle to the moon and landed.
Right, NASA contracted out the lander, and so it's the first one. Although you must say that when NASA did it, well, we had astronauts, a crew on board, so NASA had to make sure everything was perfect. We had a robust landing gear, and we were able to land each time and come back. And also it seems that this mission, wasn't designed to last through the lunar night, which I thought was interesting, but I guess they wanted to save some money. Whereas if you beefed up some of the systems and the batteries on board, you could probably pick them up once the sun shines on the probe again. And they're going to try again, but they're not expecting it to because the batteries weren't designed to last through the lunar night.
So how long exactly did they say the lunar night would be?
Oh, it's like 14 days.
That's what I was afraid of.
That's a cold soak for sure.
Well, so I guess some applause is due. It seems like the mission was reasonably successful. There's a few things, points they missed the
Right,
mark.
and then the Japanese probe on the moon, the sun came up where it was, and that's transmitting data again. And that was the probe that landed upside down, but was still able to send back data.
So, the data that we're getting is mostly photographic, maybe some other, temperature and.
Well, there are a lot of instruments that'll check, the solar radiation and all kinds of space environment, and also do some analysis of the surface using laser and other instruments that can penetrate the down below the surface and see what kind of chemicals and minerals are there.
Well, fascinating. Is this a prelude to, in any way, to the landing of humans on the moon again?
It is, and but there's two or three more missions by Intuity machines coming up. Intuitive machines, I should say.
Right.
And then the landing with the Starship, that's going to be a lot more tricky. Let's put it that way. Because the Starship hasn't flown yet, and they're supposed to land on the moon in 2 years, but that 2 year window keeps moving out. So it's always 2 years from now.
Okay. Well, is that a wrap for us today?
That's a wrap. And as usual, glad we could get together.
Likewise, and we will see you on the radio next week, if all goes as planned.
Be well, Rich.
Once again, Rick's Tech Talk, a weekly feature on RPM News Weekly. We'll catch up with you soon. Take care, Rick.